Okay, well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Battle of Saratoga, which was a campaign, not just a battle. It involved actually a number of different battles. And what was happening in the American Revolution up to this point was that Washington was fighting down near Philadelphia. General Howe, the British commander, had come from New York. They'd occupied the New Jersey area during the period 1775, 76, and into 77. And at this point, during actually this battle, Washington was involved on Brandywine, which is right near Philadelphia, fighting General Howe's British forces. And the Revolution obviously had not gone well from 1775, when we had the Lexington and Concord. And then, of course, Washington was appointed as the commander at the Second Continental Congress in 1775. They had the Siege of Boston. Forcing the British out of Boston, they left to Halifax, and they came back, invaded New York in 1776. At the time of the Declaration of Independence, Washington had occupied New York. The British then ended up driving Washington out. They went into New Jersey. Eventually, in Christmas time of 1776, of course, the Battle of Trenton, Washington attacked the German outpost in New Jersey, just to give you a little background of what was going on. At this point, Washington's down in Brandywine near Philadelphia. There are battles of Germantown and Brandywine around the Philadelphia area. Eventually, the British took Philadelphia because it was the capital. The Continental Congress moved from Philadelphia to York, Pennsylvania at that point. So this is the time of 1777. Well, the British, because they certainly at this point were trying to figure out how to end this revolution, decided on a plan. And the plan was developed in London. Lord Germain, who was the British, like the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of War, Secretary of Defense, he agreed with this gentleman, John Burgoyne, who is pictured here. Now, I'll give you a little background of Gentleman Johnny, because I'll just try to summarize it. He was a playboy. That's why he's called Gentleman Johnny. Had a lot of mistresses, liked women, liked drinking, liked gambling. Had a lot of gambling debts, so he owed a lot of money to people back in England, so he was not in good shape financially. But he was a military man who had worked his way up through the French and Indian War, and he went to Lord Germain in London in the February-March of 1777, and he said, I have this plan. Why don't we do this, see if we can end this American Revolution, this rebellion. And his plan was to basically, the British forces were in Canada. He said, if we can get a force and move down through the Lake Champlain, obviously water, because the British have their navy and the Americans really have some ships, but not very many, we could sail down Lake Champlain and end up, we could move down and capture Albany. And this way we would split the colonies, because Massachusetts and New Hampshire are over here where my hand is. We could split the New England colonies from the rest of the colonies, and maybe this would end the revolution. It would be a big defeat for the Americans. So he wanted to come down and reach Albany was his target. He also thought that because his forces, that wouldn't be enough. He thought if he could get another force to come through the St. Lawrence, land in Lake Ontario, land at Oswego, and another force would come across the Mohawk Valley and the Mohawk River, and the two forces would meet at Albany, defeating the Americans who were stationed there. So that was his plan. He also thought that maybe the British could send a force up from New York, and the three forces would converge on Albany, and then thus defeat the Americans there, split the colonies, maybe end the war, possibly. So this was the plan that he proposed to Lord Germain in the February-March period of 1777. This was the plan, to move down, cross this way, up this way, defeat Albany, and so that's what the plan kind of looked like on a map of what was then New York State at this point. Settlement, basically in New York State, was moving along the Mohawk River and ended up about the area of Utica just before the Syracuse area. It was kind of where settlement had pretty much ended. We had moved up Hudson, of course, and across into this area pretty well occupied and moved over along the Hudson. So it was a frontier area. Certainly the Mohawk Valley was a frontier area. So basically this was the plan. And in he got to Canada. From April, May of 1777, Burgoyne's forces were located in Canada. In the meantime, St. Ledger, who was the colonel who was going to take the St. Lawrence River route, was also in Canada, and his forces began to move by water down the St. Lawrence toward toward Lake Ontario. So this was the plan, and Burgoyne had about 9,000 troops. He decided St. Ledger had a force of about 2,000, a lot of Indians. Now, the Iroquois at this point, most of the Iroquois tribes were allied to the British. The reason being that, especially in talking about New York State history, here at Johnstown, Sir John Johnston was a loyalist, and he was a great supporter of the Indians. The Indians had meetings there. Joseph Brant, who was the leader of the Mohawks, and Sir Guy Johnston were kind of like really very close. So the Mohawks and many of the other tribes were supporting the British. They had since the French and Indian War back in the 1750s. So anyway, St. Ledger's force was coming down with some Canadian Indians. He landed at Oswego and he got some more Indians. Obviously some more the Iroquois joined him there in Oswego. The plan was to move east along, of course, the Mohawk, and end up in Albany, part of St. Ledger's plan. So this was the plan. Now the problem with St. Ledger's problem was, of course, he sailed down the St. Lawrence, he got into Lake Oswego. Of course, they landed Oswego, which was a British fort, had been since the French and Indian era, and he was going to move east. The problem was there was a fort in his way, Fort Stanwix, which is now in Utica. And that was the problem, that was the thing that was blocking him. So he had to figure out, he had to obviously take this fort, capture the fort. So that was his plan. We move back to Burgoyne. Now Burgoyne has now left St. John's in Canada and is moving with ships and men down into Lake Champlain. This is the period, May, June of 1777. He leaves Canada and he lands at Crown Point, which is right here on the map. It's at the end of Lake Champlain. He moves down here and he gets to Crown Point. Crown Point, just below Crown Point, is Fort Ticonderoga, which had been captured by the Americans in 1775, 2 years earlier. Obviously, he had to take Fort Ticonderoga. Obviously, he had to take each of the forts along the way toward Albany. He moved to the area around Fort Ticonderoga. The American commander, Arthur St. Clair, had about 2,000 men in the fort. The problem was that just above Fort Ticonderoga is a huge mountain, Mount Defiance. And the problem is the mountain overlooks the fort. Now, nobody thought they could climb up this mountain, get artillery on there. Everybody said, this is impossible. So Arthur St. Clair thought he was pretty safe in Fort Ticonderoga, which is a very well, if you've ever been to Fort Ticonderoga, it's a fantastic fort. It guards, obviously, the waterway. Its defenses are mostly toward the water. Its defenses are not on the land side, and there's the mountain. Well, Burgoyne's forces get to the area around Fort Ticonderoga, and General Phillips, who's his second in command, with a couple of other officers, devise a plan to get up Fort Defiance. Let's see if we can climb up, put some artillery on there. We'll look down in the fort, and the fort will be, there's no way they could defend against this. And that's exactly what happens. Now, St. Clair thought this was impossible. They're never going to get up there, but they did. So they put some artillery on Fort Defiance. And at this point, St. Clair, with his 2,000 men in Fort Ticonderoga, was outnumbered by about 8,000 or 9,000 in Burgoyne's force. So he decided that he had to abandon the fort at this point. There was no way he could, once they got the artillery up there, he decided he had to abandon it. He sent some forces into what is now New Hampshire. He sent some forces down toward Castleton, which is just below Fort Ticonderoga. He began to split his forces up as they abandoned Fort Ticonderoga. And there's a whole series involved in this whole part of this this campaign. So St. Clair moves his forces, and they move to Hubbardton, which is in now Vermont. Okay, just east of they. Some of the forces go there. Some go to Castleton Down. Some go to Skinnysboro. They move south. Obviously, they're breaking up, leaving Fort Ticonderoga, abandoning it. So this happens in June of 1777 at this point. Some of his forces went to into this area here, St. Clair's forces. Well, the British, once they realized that they had conquered Fort Ticonderoga and that whole area, decided to follow the forces who left, the American forces, and Brigadier General Simon Fraser's force moves toward Hubbardton because they're the Americans, some of the Americans have stayed, have ended up moving to Hubbardton in Vermont. There's a huge battle at Vermont, at Hubbardton. There are several militia forces under Colonel Seth Warner, who had fought at Bunker Hill back in 1775, another colonel named Francis, and they were militia. The problem was, when they landed at Hubbardton, they didn't put out any pickets out in the area to make sure that nobody was following them. They kind of just had camp for the night and just were relaxing, figuring, well, nobody's going to follow us this far. They made a mistake. Fraser's force crosses, and he attacks the militia at the Battle of Hubbardton, which is a huge battle. Simon Fraser's force attacks Warner and Francis. Francis tries to defend. He is killed. Another Colonel Hale is also a member of the militia. He is killed in the battle. Finally, the Americans are holding the British back at this point, which is good. Fraser's men, he had about 750 men. The Americans had about 1,000, so actually they had the better numbers. And they were holding these hills there in the Battle of Hubbardton. In the meantime, Burgoyne also sends Baron Riedesel and the Germans to help Fraser. So the British get more reinforcements. Once Riedesel and his men come, he has about 3,000 Germans. They end up coming to help Fraser. The Americans are defeated and retreated. About 200 Americans are captured, so it's certainly a defeat for the Americans. In the meantime, St. Clair himself has gone down to Castleton and finally to Fort Anne. The next major fort here would be Fort Anne. They had abandoned Fort George. As you see on the map here, that was abandoned and burned. They moved to Fort Anne, from Castleton to Fort Anne. And St. Clair says, well, maybe we can hold Fort Anne at this point. Again, the Americans are outnumbered. There's about 2,000 under St. Clair. There's about 8,000 or 9,000 under Burgoyne. So obviously, they don't have the advantage in numbers at this point. So they move to Fort Anne. There's a battle at Fort Anne because the British then move on Fort Anne. Actually, Fort Ticonderoga, George was burned. At the Battle of Hubbardton, they move south to Fort Anne. Obviously, their aim is, of course, Albany. So they're moving south to Fort Anne. There's a skirmish there between New York militia and St. Clair's men and Burgoyne. And it's decided that they should burn Fort Anne. Again, they don't have the men. Burgoyne has 8,000 or 9,000. They have 2,000. There's no sense, you know, they have a small skirmish, but they decide, let's burn Fort Anne and retreat further south. They keep moving further south because they don't have the numbers. So they burn Fort Anne on July 9th. We're into July now. In July 16th, the British occupy Skinnysboro. Now, Skinnysboro is named after Colonel Skinny, who was a loyalist. I guess the town was set up by his ancestors, so of course they call it Skinnysboro. It's now called Whitehaven or some other, it has some other name today, but I'm going to use the names that we had then. So anyway, the British move into Skinnysboro, Fort George had been burned, Fort Anne has now been burned, they're beginning to move further south. At this point, so, in the meantime, St. Leger is coming down. He's now at Oswego. He begins to move at the same time in July, actually July 25th. You can see the actual date. He leaves Oswego to begin his move, obviously, to come east to meet Burgoyne at Albany. That's, of course, part of this plan. So, we moved to basically Fort Edward. Now, St. Clair has now moved to Fort Edward. He left Fort Anne, that was burned. Now they moved to Fort Edward, the next fort. At this point, the commander of this whole area under the Americans was General Philip Schuyler. And Schuyler was the overall commander. St. Clair really reported to Schuyler. So Schuyler decided what we need to do, obviously, in the meantime, in this whole area here, we knock down trees, we dam up streams, we make it very difficult for Burgoyne to move south, but we don't have the forces yet to stop him. So they knock down trees. The Americans, they block different things. They ambush the British at certain times on this. They'll have little raids, and they slow Burgoyne up. Burgoyne moves very slowly. Now, not only has he got these 9,000 men, but he's got all the baggage, the cooking utensils, women are along with him. It's a whole entourage at this point that's moving south, and obviously it moves very slowly. The 9,000 men plus all of probably about 12,000 people moving south very slowly with all the baggage and wagons, and it's a slow-moving thing. You have to move along roads. So a lot of the roads were blocked, the trees down in the roads. The Americans are slowing the British up. Okay, so we move to Fort Edward. Now, at this point, St. Clair is at Fort Edward. Schuyler decides, well, maybe we ought to burn Fort Edward because we can't, again, still stop him. He's still got too many men, and so we'll retreat further south. So the Americans kept retreating down. So they decide to burn Fort Edward. This is on July 24th or so. They burn Fort Edward. Burgoyne moves very slowly. From July 9th to July 24th, it takes him forever to get to Fort Anne because, again, he's got all these entourage. He's got to wait for people. The women want to rest. The men want to rest. The men are in heavy coats with the big helmets, the rifles, their packs. They're not dressed for the summer. Remember, this is July now. It's very, very hot. I don't know what the actual temperature was, but they've got to be roasting in their coats, and they're marching along very slowly. So it takes them forever to get from Fort Anne to Fort Edward, which is really not very far. It takes them forever. By the time he gets all of his men down to Fort Edward, finds out Fort Edward is now burned. So he continues to move south. Some of it he can move by water, but he gets to really this area here, Fort Edward, and he decides, well, I better move the rest of it by land, which slows him up even further. Now, they did have a few, three actual ships that came down Lake Champlain from the beginning along with Burgoyne, and they get into this area here. He decides that now he needs to move more overland. He's got German Hessians with him. He's got British troops. He's got the women. He's got all the luggage. He's got some Indians with him, and he's moving south into this area. At this point, there in this area here, right around Fort Edward, is a woman named Jane McCree. She was the fiancée of one of the British officers, and she was living in this area here, right around Fort, right just near Fort Edward. Well, what happened was, now there's all kinds of stories about Jane McCree, and I'll show you the one that made the history books about some Indians who were accompanying her, supposedly. Now, there are different stories about this. This makes all the U.S. textbooks in the schools about the Indians and Jane McCree. Now, there's all kinds of stories. Now, did the Indians just kill her, decide they didn't want to take her? Now, remember, she's a fiancée of a British officer. The Indians knew this. Unfortunately, they're Wyandotte Indians. You want to know the actual Indian, the tribe, was the Wyandottes. And they're taking her, supposedly, they're escorting her back to the British lines. Well, unfortunately, something happens. Now, there are several different stories about this. One of the stories is that they got tired of taking her and they decided, you know, we want scalps. We'll just kill this woman. Who wants to bother with her anymore? And that's the one story, okay, that came out. Other stories that I've now read, that they came across an American patrol. The American patrol fired on the Indians. One of the bullets hit her and killed her. Now, so whether this particular picture is accurate or not is a question, but she was the fiancée of the British officer. Well, this made a lot of the locals heard about this. The colonists in this area heard about this, and they thought, oh my gosh, the Indians are scalping and killing everybody. The Burgoyne has let the Indians loose. The Indians are going to, create havoc. They're going to kill everybody. They're going to scalp everybody. And it made the propaganda for the Americans. And it brought a lot of militia people who heard the story into the American camp. So it began to, the American numbers begin to grow at this point over this Jane McRae. So whether the picture is accurate or not, made most of the textbooks, you'll see it there, of the death of Jane McRae. But we want to mention it because it does, it fans the propaganda, because the colonists hear about this and they think, oh, the Indians are wild and all that, and this one poor woman, and she was scalped and killed.
But didn't it have an effect where people wanted to enlist?
Yeah, it made the militia want to join up. They said, oh my God, we better get our rifles. Anybody who wasn't part of the American forces now began to go. So militias in Vermont and New Hampshire and in New York, this grows their numbers, and they're beginning to get organized, these militia groups. Okay, so anyway, he's now at Fort Edward. We've gotten Burgoyne this far south at this point. And then there's the Jane McRae incident, which he knows about. He's heard about this. Situation here. But it was a good propaganda for the colonists. July 29th is about the point that we're at now in on the calendar. Burgoyne then goes to the Hudson. He'd been inland a little bit. Now he moves toward the more toward the Hudson, just above the village of Saratoga, just above that called Fort Miller, which is about 10, 15 miles north of the Saratoga area. He's now at Fort Miller. Let's move to St. Ledger, who's come down, and he's come down into here. In July, he's moving. And finally, about August 3rd, he reaches Fort Stanwix. Now, in Fort Stanwix, luckily, it had been abandoned for many years. It was an old fort from the French and Indian War. It had been abandoned, and nobody paid a lot of attention to it. But then, of course, with the American Revolution, they decided, well, you know, this really controls the Mohawk. It controls the western part of New York. Remember, this is the frontier now at this point. Most of the area around the fort is all woods. It's not like it is today. It's in the middle of Utica, you know, a big city around it. Didn't exist then. It's all fort. It's a fort in the middle of the wilderness. There's not much around it. There are cabins, obviously. There are people living in this area, German settlers and Irish settlers, but big German communities along this area of Canajoharie and that area now along the Thruway, if you go along the Thruway. These are big settlements of German, Irish immigrants who had settled in this area in log cabins. You know, again, they're worried about the Indians. There's certainly Indians around, and they had been fighting Indians every so often, obviously driving Indians away. They had a small militia forces in their towns. So St. Ledger has gotten to Fort Stanwix, August 3rd. The Americans in the fort, there's about 550 New York Continentals under Peter Gansevoort, German. Dutch or German. He was either Dutch or German. Might have been Dutch. Okay. Anyway, he's the commander of the fort. St. Ledger says, I got all these Indians. I'm surrounding you. I've got British troops. You're all surrounded. Surrender. Gansevoort says, no, I'm not going to surrender. I've now built up the fort enough during this time, and I'm not going to surrender. So they lay siege to the St. Ledger and the Indians, much of whom were Indians at this point. His force probably had half Indians, half Tories and British, if you wanted to look at the mix of his fort. So anyway, they're surrounding the fort. Gansevoort says, no, I'm not going to surrender. In the meantime, of course, everybody knows that the British have reached this area here around Fort Stanwix. So in the area around Herkimer, a little bit further east along the Mohawk, is a place called Fort Dayton, which was a very, again, another wood log cabin fort that the Americans had for protection against Indians. These forts were really against Indians more than they were anything else until the American Revolution. So there's about 300 Tryon militia. Tryon County is the county that Herkimer's in. And there's 300 county Tryon militia. Now, they know about the siege of Fort Stanwix, so let's go try to help and rescue the fort, right? So they decide to move, of course, from the area there around Herkimer toward Fort Stanwix. Nicholas Herkimer is their commander, and they move in August, in early August, toward the fort. Well, St. Ledger learns about this fort, that this group is moving toward the fort. So I got to stop this force because they'll join the fort and that'll make things even harder for me. So St. Ledger sends Sir Guy Johnston and Joseph Brant, the Indian chief, with about 400 Indians, 150 Tories and British force, to go toward the forest, the group that's moving from Herkimer. So they're going to ambush them. That's the plan. We'll ambush them. They're along the trail here. It's all woods. Remember, New York State is all woods. Trails are only dirt paths. There's not much of a road here along the Mohawk at that point. And so the force is moving west toward the fort. Johnston and the Indians are moving east. The other force is moving west. And they meet at a place along the Mohawk at a place called, we now call it Oriskany. And at Oriskany, the Brant and Johnston's force ambush the Tryon County Militia. And of course, there's all kinds of stories and pictures about Nicholas Herkimer. They're surrounded by these Indians. They're fighting them off. It's hand-to-hand fighting. What happens finally is that the Indians are finally driven off. They're told that there's another force is going to come from Albany. So they're finally driven off. And this is a very famous battle because it basically stops. It kind of messes up St. Ledger's plans about Fort Stanwix. He's still at Fort Stanwix. He has sent this Battle of Oriskany, kind of a draw. Basically, it was a draw. The Indians retreat back to the Fort Stanwix area. So the Battle of Oriskany is August 9th, if you want to know where we are date-wise. In the meantime, Schuyler in Albany, of course, knows about Fort Stanwix. Obviously, he wants to help the people here defend against St. Ledger's force. And he sends Benedict Arnold, who was a general in the American Army. Arnold had been sent north from Washington much earlier in the year. He had about 950 Continental American troops, not militia, but American troops, to go toward the fort's aid. What had happened was he had about 950 men, and he begins to move toward Fort Dayton. He gets to Fort Dayton, and he decides, well, he's heard about St. Ledger's force. He has about 950 men. St. Ledger has about 2,000, so he's certainly outnumbered. What he does is there's a captive called Host Schuyler. He is the brother of General Philip Schuyler, who is the American commander. Same family, actually, brother. Host was a loyalist. He had been captured by the Americans. So Arnold says, you know what we'll do? We'll fool them. Even though they have many more men, we'll send Host to the British and tell them that Arnold has not 950 men, but about 3,000 men. So this will scare the Indians, scare St. Ledger's force. So Host Schuyler goes to the British. He tells them, Arnold's force is coming. He has 3,000-4,000 Continentals. He only had 900. 3,000-4,000. And so he lies. The Indians heard about this, and they're thinking, oh, my gosh, this great force is going to come to attack us. A lot of the Indians leave St. Ledger at this point. They just go off. The tribes, you know, they say, we're not going to bother with this. And there's more forces coming. We don't want to. There's 3,000 Continentals, although there wasn't. I mean, we're worried. So a lot of the Indians abandoned St. Ledger at this point. At this point, St. Ledger, realizing that Arnold is coming, thinking he has 3,000, you've got the Fort Dayton militias also coming to rescue Fort Stanwix. And St. Ledger finally ends up just basically lifting the siege. He goes back to Oswego and eventually back to Canada. So that's the St. Ledger part of this, the Oriskany battle, the Fort Stanwix part of this. And you can go to Fort Stanwix today, and they'll take you into the fort and you can have a tour of the whole fort and all of this. And it's still standing today. It's fairly well maintained. Obviously, it's part of the New York State Historical Association, I think, runs it. I'm not exactly sure who, but I've been there. It's you'll see it in the middle of Utica today. Fort Stanwix still stands. I don't think Fort Dayton survived. I'm not quite sure because it wasn't much of a fort, so I don't know if they had actually survived or not. But anyway, that's this part of the campaign. Well, you have the battles at Oriskany and Fort Stanwix. You had the Battle of Hubbardton. Obviously, Burgoyne is still moving south at this point. Now, he doesn't know about St. Ledger's defeat yet. He doesn't know. He doesn't get this information about St. Ledger. Now, he's moving south, And he gets into early, well, we're about the, well, because that was, Oriskany was around the 6th of August. In the meantime, he's moving down here into the, about the middle. We're now at about the middle of August. He's at this area just north of Saratoga. And he finds out that General Howe, the British in New York, are not going to come up. That was the other part of the plan, was for him to come up, them to come here. You know, this three-point thing, and that would take Albany, and, you know, that's the plan. Now, he finds out that Howe's not coming. In fact, General Howe goes to Philadelphia because he's more interested in capturing Philadelphia than he is in helping Burgoyne. He had agreed to the whole thing with Lord Germain. They had all had communications, and Howe was supposed to help him. Well, General Clinton down in New York had been told by Howe, you know, maybe you can go up the Hudson and maybe you can, try to help Burgoyne here. Well, at first, Clinton really doesn't move very much. He's worried that the Americans might come back to New York, although Washington's force is now in near Philadelphia, not in New York. But he really doesn't make much of a move at this point. But Burgoyne does learn that Howe's not coming. Now, he doesn't know that St. Ledger's been defeated. Okay, he doesn't find that out in August. He doesn't know that yet. So he's hoping that, well, if he doesn't come up, maybe just the two will be enough. You know, he'll come this way, I'll come this way, and it'll work. So he continues on. He's a little skeptical at this point because he was hoping that the British from New York would come up and help him. So part of the plan has kind of been defeated, really, by Howe and by Clinton. Anyway, he gets to this area, as I say, now Burgoyne is just north of Saratoga, and he decides that he needs supplies. So he decides, well, he heard that there were a lot of supplies in New Hampshire. We got all these New Hampshire people with their farms and their food, and, you know, they had farms, and they had wheat, and they had cattle, and obviously that we could be resupplied here by, you know, maybe we should send a force into Vermont. So he decides to send a group of Germans under Lieutenant Colonel Baum. Lieutenant Colonel Baum has about 600 men, and Burgoyne says, well, there's a few militia here in Bennington. There's about 200 guys. You know, we'll send 600 or 700 and you'll defeat them easily. So that's what he thought, okay? That was not the case. Baum later learns that General John Stark, who had fought at Bunker Hill, has now about over 1,000 men, in fact, almost 2,000, sitting at Bennington. They had come down. They were New Hampshire militia and Vermont militia, that actually were settled here at Bennington because they knew about, of course, Burgoyne's trip coming south. So they were going to eventually go help, you know, defeat Burgoyne. So they're sitting here at Bennington. Now, they're not just a couple hundred. There's at least 1,000, 1,400. I've heard as much as 2,000. You can look as to whether the numbers are a little fluctuated. A lot of them are militia. It's hard to count them. They come and they go. They go back to their farm, then they come back the next day. It's hard to count numbers, but I've heard 1,400, I've heard 2,000. Baum has 600 guys, okay? Goes to Bennington, hopefully to get the supplies. Runs into Stark, and of course Stark obviously totally outnumbers him and just attacks Baum's forces as Baum's forces arrive. Warner is there with his 200 militia that he'd come from Fort Ticonderoga. Remember, Seth Warner was down in that area there. He had 200 militia, so there's probably at least almost 2,000 men. Baum's force of 600 runs into the 2,000, and Stark at this point kind of just plays with him, just defeats many of his men, destroys pretty much Baum's force at the Battle of Bennington. And not only that, but Burgoyne was still worried about this force. He says, well, 600. Then he heard that, well, there's 2,000 here. Uh-oh, I better send more guys. So he decides to send more men under Colonel Brayman. Another German force of another about 200 men comes to help Baum. Well, they get there, and again, it's still only 500 against over 2,000. His forces are defeated. The Battle of Bennington is August 16th, if you want to know the actual date. At this point, Burgoyne has lost Baum's 500 men. He's lost Brayman's men. He's down now to about maybe 7,000 from about 9 when he started. About 7,000 at this point, maybe 6,000 or 7,000. He's lost some men along the way, obviously, in some of those little skirmishes before we get to Saratoga. So he's down about, again, almost 1,000 Hessians are either captured or defeated. Some of them, by the way, stayed in America. Some went back to Germany when they were captured, those that were captured. Some of them stayed in America, became settlers, and by the way, this area, a lot of their descendants are still there today. So that's very interesting that I thought that you'd find that a little bit interesting that some of them actually did stay and didn't go back to Germany, or they were captured and then they were eventually released, some of them. Okay, finally we get to the area just north of Albany. And Burgoyne's force is there at this point. He's lost some men. He's a little discouraged about Clinton not coming up. He begins to learn about Oriskany and St. Ledger. What should I do? Should I go back to Fort Edward and go back north? What do I do at this point? I'm here. Clinton's force is not going to come up. St. Ledger's has been defeated. You know, should we retreat? He has an officers' meeting. You know, what should we do at this point? So anyway, they're just north of Saratoga. Well, unbeknownst to them, the American force is growing by leaps and bounds. Daniel Morgan's sharpshooters, part of Washington's force down in Philadelphia. Morgan had been sent north August 19th. Washington sent Morgan's riflemen, about 500 riflemen, north. They were expert shots. They were a great force, obviously, for Washington. He sends them north to help the American forces. So Morgan gets onto the scene in the Albany around the middle of August. August 19th, I have as a date. He goes up and joins. Arnold is already there. Schuyler has a force. And, of course, the militia is growing because of the Jay McCree thing. Forces are gathering more and more and more. At this point, Burgoyne is losing men. The Americans are gathering men. Probably around 10,000 Americans at this point. Burgoyne has about 6,000 to 7,000 left at this point. What's interesting about Burgoyne is that I thought this was fascinating. As you read a little bit about what's happening with him as the leader here, he has a lot of dinner parties. Now, they're in the middle of the, you know, they've landed at Stillwater, I mean at Fort Miller, and again, they're having all kinds of dinners. They've got the silverware and the package and all the women, and he has a mistress, one of the supply officers' ladies, is his mistress. And of course, he's having fun at this point. You know, he's having other activities beside war at this point. They're having dinner parties like they're in the middle of London. You know, they're having at Fort Miller, which was a small, tiny fort. But again, it was, you know, they were fairly comfortable. And this is the period, this is August of 1777. In the meantime, August 4th, the Americans had gone, had retreated actually to Stillwater, which is south of Saratoga. They had retreated this far down. Again, in the meantime, American forces are coming, militias coming from New York State, more militias coming from New Hampshire and Vermont. Connecticut has sent militia up. Obviously, everybody knows about Burgoyne now. So the American forces certainly are growing, militias coming from all directions. The American forces is growing by leaps and bounds at this point. Gates has about 7,000 Continentals. Bloody has all this militia. So there are probably at least 10 or 12,000 Americans gathering at this point in the area of either what is now Vermont and the area of the Albany area here. So the Americans are up at Stillwater. They decide that just north of Stillwater, there is a high point on the river, and there's a road that comes down from Fort Edward toward Albany. There's a road right along the river. Now, obviously, this is the road that Burgoyne is taking now at this point, since Fort Edward, he's on land now more than he was with the ships, and of course, he's traveling down through very, very slowly. And again, it's August at this point. He had been on the east side of the river at some points. He'd been on the west side of the river at some points. At some points, they were on the east side, then they crossed over, and on the west side, they'd kept moving from one side to the other. So what happens here at this point is that the Americans decide that Stillwater's not good enough to really defend against, but just north of there, there's this very high point here along the river road. It's called Bemis Heights. And the Americans decide that they should fortify this area. First Battle of Saratoga, called Freeman's Farm, September 19, 1777. Now, what happens at this point, now Stillwater is down here where my hand is, and Albany's down here, and this Stillwater's down in here, and there's this Bemis Tavern here. It's a small red building on this hill. It was a tavern for people to stop along the road and, you know, they could spend the night. That was the kind of thing you did, as if you were traveling, you know, from north down toward Albany. So they decided that these heights here were pretty good. They could block Burgoyne's force along this the river road, and so they occupied this Bemis Heights. Now, General Philip Schuyler was in command of the American forces, which I mentioned, at Stillwater, so they move a little bit further north toward this area of Bemis Heights. Saratoga is up here. I tried to draw a little square. This is where Saratoga is to give you an idea at this point. And this is the area between Saratoga and Stillwater. That's the area that we talk about. But it's close to the village of Saratoga, which is where, of course, the battle gets its name. This is the Battle of Freeman's Farm, part of the First Battle of Saratoga, September 19th. The Americans have massed cannon here. Thaddeus Kosciuszko is a Polish immigrant, comes to the American aid in early 1777. He's an engineer, and he begins to fortifications along this area here. And they put artillery on there. The American camp is really here at this point. Burgoyne is have to come down along this road. Obviously, he's going to be blocked here by the artillery here, which commands, of course, the road at this point. So basically now, Burgoyne realizes that he's got this big American force now sitting in this area. So he's got to do something. He's got to attack them, obviously, and get rid of them. So the Battle of Freeman's Farm really starts in September. And what the plan was that Baron Radziszel, the Germans, would go this way. The Americans are here, maybe go around. You know, the Germans would go this way. Some of the British forces would also go around and attack them from over here, from this side, from the west. That was the plan, and he'd have a major force in this area here. And at a place called Freeman's Farm, it's farmland. There are several farms there. It's a pretty wooded area, but there are open spaces. There's a big ravine here just south of Swords Farm, which is where Burgoyne's kind of headquarters was at this point. And he decides, well, we got to obviously eliminate this fort here, with this group here, this Americans, so we'll try to go around. So he sends numbers of men, obviously, this way and this way to obviously attack the Americans. Now, at this point, Schuyler, in late August, actually a little bit before this battle, had been relieved by Horatio Gates. The Congress, well, Gates was a favorite of the American Congress, not a favorite of Washington, but Gates was put in command. Schuyler was relieved. They felt that, well, Schuyler really hadn't stopped Burgoyne, so he was relieved, and Horatio Gates takes over the group. Now, Horatio Gates is not a man to do, you know, he's not a very active person. He decides, well, I'm fortified here. All I have to do is sit. He can't get around me. There's no way. This is all woods and, you know, what's he going to do? He's got to obviously try to take me, but I'm pretty fortified here. So Gates doesn't really want to do anything. Well, second in command is Benedict Arnold. Arnold says, no, we really should attack these forces. You know, maybe because at this point, we have a lot more men at this point. Burgoyne has about, 6,000-7,000. We have at least 12,000 at this point. We've gathered more men, more Continentals, more militia. Militia's coming, and the American forces, again, are continuing to grow. So we, at this point, can probably attack the British as they try this maneuver here. And Colonel Hamilton, with about 1,100 British, moves along this little road here. It's really more a path, and he moves into this area to try to get around the Americans. This is on the beginning of September 19th. About 9 o'clock, he begins his move. There's about 14,000 Americans that he doesn't know that are in this area, about 14,000 at this point, you know. And again, Burgoyne's force is about 7, so obviously certainly outnumbered. But Hamilton's force of about 1,100, 1,500, you can read numbers again, vary. He moves along this road to try to get around Bemis Heights. Well, Arnold says, we ought to do something. Gates says, no, I don't want to do anything. Let's just sit here and, you know, they can't attack us. We're on this Bemis Heights here, 200 feet above the Hudson. There's no way he can get down the road. We block this. What's he going to do? You know, the West is all forest. So he's not going to be able to do much. And Arnold says, no, we ought to really, you know, send a force up there to attack these men that have come down. And so what they do is Arnold and Morgan's men move up from Bemis Heights to attack the British as they're moving this way. So you have numbers of militia. Arnold and Morgan, about 2,000 men, if you add the total number. Brigadier General Simon Fraser, who I've mentioned before at Hubbardton, has a force of about 2,000, and he's moving into this direction. Arnold's forces are coming up. Obviously, they're going to clash here on around what was eventually called Freeman's Farm, which is kind of the center of this battle on September 19th. So Arnold and Morgan's men, along with Poor's New Hampshire militia, Lernard's Continentals, numbers of other American forces, attack the British in this area around Freeman's Farm. Now, the Americans fight from behind trees. The British, this area around Freeman's Farm is open. It's a farm. He's got a wheat field. You know, it's open area. So the British march into the area, you know, that this is the way they fight. You know, they march like this, you know, and they're all in line there. And the Americans are up on the hills in the trees. You know, Morgan's men and Arnold's men and the other militia, Silly's militia, Lernard, you'll sign different leaders of the militia forces, are in the trees here, you know, attacking the British out in the open. And things are not going well for the British. They're losing lots of men, of course, in this attack by Arnold and Morgan. And more forces are joining, more American forces are joining. The British are holding their own, but they're losing lots of men. They're attacked on several sides, you know, at one point from over here, and they're attacked from over here, and they're attacked from over here. They're fighting in different, you know, they're being attacked by different numbers of militia and Arnold and Morgan's force. It's the 20th Foot, if you want to know the British units. There's the 67th Foot. A lot of British regiments we're talking about now are down in this, are in this area. And it doesn't look good because the Americans obviously are attacking them, defeating their troops. They're losing lots of men at this point. Burgoyne finally hears about all this. He moves from Swords Farm. General Phillips, his second in command, moves more forces into there. There's bayonet charges. The Americans are shooting from behind the trees. The British are charging. A lot of them are being killed because they're out in the open. There's the 2nd and 4th New York Infantry, if you want to know all of the different units. There's Silly's New Hampshire, Lernard's Continentals from Connecticut, numbers of different American leaders at this point. Riedesel's force is finally sent, 1,100 men, to kind of help Hamilton. They realize things are not going well here. We're not defeating the Americans. They're not defeating us, but we're only defeating them. But we're losing lots of men. So Riedesel's force, about 11,000, comes up to Freeman's Farm. He crosses on this road here to join the British. And Riedesel has about another, 2,000 men. I says 1,100 on the map, roughly. And he joins the Battle of Freeman's Farm. Finally, the Americans withdraw at this point. They move further south. It's kind of a draw, basically, I guess, if you want to say, well, who won, who lost. The British lose a lot of men. That's the important thing here. They've lost numbers of men. So Burgoyne's force of 9 went down to 7, is probably down around 6 now. He's losing men. The Americans, in the meantime, are gaining men. They're up to about 12,000. They certainly outnumber Burgoyne at this point. But it was considered a draw, Freeman's Farm. And in the meantime, the British now, as the Americans go back, kind of regroup at this point, the British decide that they're going to build some redoubts, some fixed areas with cannon and men behind logs. These what we call redoubts are kind of like little stations where you can put numbers of men. Some of them are very large, you know, bigger than this room. Some are about this size. I've been there to see what they look like today. There isn't much there, unfortunately, today. But these redoubts are built right around Freeman's Farm. So they put a large force there. At Freeman's, the Americans have retreated. And so the Battle of Freeman's Farm ends as kind of a draw. But the important thing is the Americans have gained more numbers of men. Burgoyne has lost more numbers of men. He knows that Ledger's not coming. He knows that Clinton's not coming. Things are not doing well, but he still is hopeful at this point that maybe he can force his way south somehow. Nobody knows really how, but that would be the plan. Clinton, in the meantime, knows about all this, of course, because Howe has says to Clinton down in New York, you ought to send some guys up the Hudson. You know, it's part of the plan, right? So Clinton moves, Brigadier Vaughn begins to move up the river at this point from New York City. Unfortunately, he's faced by Americans under Isaac Putnam, numbers of Continentals in this area just north of New York. Yeah, right in this area here. Oh, here's Vaughn. I knew I had Vaughn on here. He's at Fort Clinton, and he's fighting some American forces. He can't get up to join Burgoyne. That was the hope, that maybe Clinton could rescue him at this point. They've learned about Oriskany, so they know Ledger's not coming. Howe is down in Philadelphia. He asks Clinton, you know, send some guys up. I mean, that's the plan. Clinton says, well, I'll send Vaughn up. He gets to part of the way. He's stopped by Israel Putnam's American forces in this area of Fort Montgomery, Fort Clinton. They actually capture those American forts, but it's slow moving, and he gets to about that point at this point in September. We move to October. In the meantime, more American forces are joining. Between September 19th and October, more American forces. Now the forces are under Gates, probably about 14,000. Burgoyne has about 7, so he's outnumbered certainly 2-1. The American forces are growing every day. More and more militia are coming. And so he's now at this area of Swords Farm here with the redoubt here at Freeman's Farm. We moved finally so we had the Battle of Bennington, we had the Battle of Hubbardton, we had Oriskany, and now you have the Second Battle of Saratoga, October 7th, 1777. It's called the Battle of Bemis Heights versus Freeman's Farm. Certainly Freeman's was the very important battle, although it was a draw. Freeman's Farm is still here. You can see this is still the same area. Nothing's really changed. Bemis Heights is down here. Just a map of what the second battle would look like. Maybe I should do this. So the Americans are still here. Swords Farm, Burgoyne is still there. There's the redoubt here called the Baccalaries Redoubt under Lord Baccalaries, who was one of the under-officers of Burgoyne, had this redoubt here at Freeman's Farm. The British had also decided, well, if we fortify these redoubts, the Americans won't be able to come around our area, right? Like we were trying to go around. They're now worried that the Americans will come around. So we'll build these redoubts here, even though Burgoyne is here, most of where he is here is the Great Redoubt. Much of his forces are here, in this area here, along the river. And he builds these redoubts here. The Bremen Redoubt was occupied by the Germans, by Colonel Bremen. And he had a redoubt here. The Baccalaureus Redoubt was here again, so they couldn't come around. That was the hope, that they wouldn't come around from the west. The west is obviously there. This is east, of course. So you have the Battle of Bemis Heights on October 7th, Second Saratoga, however you want to, it's called the Battle of Saratoga more than Freeman's, but again, they're really part of the same campaign. Arnold and Gates, by the way, at this point, Arnold wants to move very quickly, attack the British. Gates doesn't want to. They get into an argument, and at this point, Gates relieves Arnold of command. He says, go sit somewhere. You're done. You can't be my second in command anymore. You're relieved of your duty. You know, I'm going to take over. And so Arnold kind of is in Bemis Tavern here. He's lost his jobs, technically. He's been relieved. And so he's been kind of shoved aside by Gates. Gates at this point still really doesn't want to do very much. He's still kind of, well, we're here, you know, we were here back in September. Now it's October. He still can't get around. He can't do it. He can't move to Albany, which is the goal, right? If we can stop him from taking Albany, obviously their whole plan is ended. And so the idea, now Burgoyne's idea at this point is to move around again, almost like the same time he had in September, is to move around again and attack them from the west. That was his plan in Freeman's Farm. It's still the same plan now. He says, well, maybe we can try this again now in October. Unfortunately, in the meantime, the Americans, as I say, have gained huge forces. So what happens is, again, the Americans at this point decide, well, if we can take these redoubts, you know, capture these redoubts here, these little forts here, we can move this way, and Burgoyne will either have to surrender or he'll have to move north or quit, right? He'll have to do something. So they begin this plan, again, to attack this side. There's a Barber's Wheat Field, which you can go to and see it today. It has a little plaque there. It's a wheat field that one of the first parts of this battle takes place. Morgan's men move through the wheat field to attack some of the outfits. They move into this area here to attack the Bremen Rietveld. In the meantime, Leonard and some of the other forces, along with Arnold, try to take the Baccalaries redoubt. Well, the Baccalaries is too strong for them, so they attack the Baccalaries, Poor's, New Hampshire, and they weren't able to take it. It was much, much too strong. By the way, Nicholas Herkimer at Oriskany, he's been wounded. He's sitting by a tree organizing the final defense here, and that's a very famous picture. It's in most of the books. Let me see if I have a picture of there. By the way, I was there 2 years ago. There are these sticks in the ground, and the stick has a blue at the top of it. It's an American position. It has a red at the top of it, and there are certain plaques there. You can go to the redoubts. There isn't much there today. I was a little bit disappointed when I went. I was hoping there'd be a little bit more to the redoubts. This is the Freeman's Farm. Again, you'll see some cannons. You know, when you go to these places, that's usually what you'll see. You'll see some cannons and some markers. But let me show you the Bremen Redoubt that is kind of interesting, because the Americans can't take the Baccalaries, but they do attack the Bremen Redoubt. So the Americans, now Arnold is still sitting back here. He says, I'm not doing anything. I'm a general. I fought with Washington. I got to get back into the fight. So unbeknownst to Gates, he gets on and he rides off. He says, the forces are moving around. I'm going to, go be part of the battle here. I don't want to be sitting here through this whole thing. Gates doesn't want to just sits there in his cabin. So he goes up to help Morgan and Leonard. And they attack the Bremen Redoubt. Now, what's interesting is they attack it from the rear and the side. And the Germans, there's about 200 Germans in there. The Americans attack the Germans. There's the best picture I can give you. I bought this when I went. You buy, obviously, books about battles. And so this is Arnold attacking the Bremen Redoubt. Now, he was shot, and he was shot in the leg during this ride to rally the troops toward the Bremen Redoubt, and they're attacking them really from the rear. You can see the fence in the front. The Germans are facing this way, and of course the Americans are coming from behind and the side. And when you go to the Bremen Redoubt, you can kind of see a little bit of this, although again, it doesn't look like this. But you can see the Bremen Redoubt. You can actually go, and their forces attack the Germans, and they overrun the Bremen Redoubt. The British, or the Germans, what's left of them, not captured or killed. Many of them were captured, obviously. They retreat to the Baccalaries Redoubt. At this point, the Americans are behind even the Baccalaries. Well, they're up above the Baccalaries Redoubt. They're on this side, and of course, they're coming up this way. So even the Baccalaries Redoubt, which was very strong, at this point, Burgoyne is really concerned. He's lost the Bremen Redoubt. He's lost another numbers of men. There's fighting here at the Baccalaries Redoubt. All the Americans don't take it. He's down to about 5,000, maybe 5,800 at this point. The Americans, the estimated is 18,000, if you added the militia and all, 18,000 against about 6, maybe. So obviously at this point, all he's got is a baccalaureate's readout. He's got the great readout here along the river, which really overlooks the river. You can go to the readout and see the readout, and it overlooks the river. So it's not going to help him from this side. I mean, it faces the river. You know, it only protects him this way, obviously, and nobody's using the Americans are not using the river. So his readout here isn't going to help him. His outposts here have been pushed back. He's got the baccalaureate's readout, but he's really been pushed back into this area here, and just around the Swords Farm area. And so at this point, it's now October 8th, 9th, in this period now. In the meantime, in the attack here, Simon Fraser was shot by Timothy Morgan. Simon Fraser, one of the leaders, you know, of the British forces, was on his horse. Timothy Murphy Ames. If you kill the guy who's riding, you know, who was leading these forces down in here, if you kill him, obviously his forces are reaching. When you kill an officer, the men don't know really what to do because nobody to lead them. You know, they get a little confused, the British, even though they're mercenary soldiers, professionals. They see their man fall, and of course they take his body back to the Great Redoubt, which is, by the way, where it's buried today. And so they lost Simon Fraser, which was a great leader, obviously, of the British forces. He was shot by Timothy Murphy. There's a whole story about this and he was shot in the stomach, ended up dying later, and he was buried at the Great Redoubt. And you can see where he was laid to rest little bit later. So anyway, this is now October 8th and 9th. Burgoyne is pushed into this area. Americans are all around here. You know, there's all Americans here, there's Americans here, Americans here. He's pushed in the baccalaureate's. You know, how long is it going to hold at this point? The Americans are totally outnumbering him. Americans are coming. Stark's forces are coming from Bennington, moving south. It doesn't look very good at this point. He's been pushed back toward this area here, the Great Redoubt, which, as I say, is not going to help him. Now, what do we do? You know, we've lost so many men. The Americans are all around us at this point. You know, what is the plan? So they plan finally on October 8th, the day after, to move north to Saratoga, which is up where my finger is, just north of Swords Farm, to move to the village there. Schuyler's house is there, and you can go see it. The day I went, unfortunately, it was closed, because I went in October, the month of the battle, and I couldn't get in 2 years ago because it was locked. I think they close it either Labor Day or around that. So I wanted to go in. I took a lot of pictures of the outside of it. Schuyler's house is there in Saratoga. And anyway, they move back to that area there to around Saratoga. Now they're basically surrounded. At this point, they're in Saratoga. They're surrounded by American forces on all sides. As I say, Stark's forces have come from Bennington and from Hubbardton, and they're moving into this area. More militia, more Continentals have been sent north. He's totally outnumbered, totally surrounded in this field that's across from Schuyler's house. He sets up a kind of a fort that's pretty good fort, actually, with the remaining forces there, about 5,000 men, plus the women, and don't forget there's women there. And again, the supplies and all that, and although they've lost most of it at this point, they're surrounded on all sides. What do we do now at this point? You know, St. Ledger's done. Clinton's not coming up. Fawn does get up a little farther. He gets up to about 80 miles from Burgoyne at this point. Vaughn's force is moving up from New York City. But he's not close enough yet. So what do I do? You know, I've lost all these men. I've lost the Germans, you know, are blaming him. The Germans right away, Riedesel and some of the Germans are blaming Burgoyne for all of these mistakes that he made. He should have retreated, you know, and gone back to Fort Edward and Fort Ticonderoga. They wanted him to go back, and he decided, no, I want to go on and complete my grand plan here. But obviously it fails. So they go back to Saratoga. He's surrounded, and by October 12th, there's obviously no hope for him. He's surrounded opposite Schuyler's mansion there. In the woods, you can go today. It's a very wooded area, very marshy. The people are there. Obviously, they're without food. Supplies have run low, basically. They've got, as I say, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 British left. the Indians have abandoned them, so you can't rule them out. The Tories have kind of split, you know, things are not going well, so the Tories say, hey, you know, you're losing now, I don't want to be part of this. The Americans capture us, they'll kill us, you know, they'll, because we're Tories, so they kind of scamper off, and so he's down to about 3,000 men, maybe a little bit more. Obviously, Stark's forces are moving south. There's no relief now from the north because Stark's forces are coming down. The others are here. The others are here. I mean, everywhere he looks, there's American forces. And on October 15th, he asks for terms from General Gates. At first, he says, you know, let us go back to Canada. And Gates says, no. You know, you lost. Okay, basically, you've lost. You're done at this point. You have to surrender. So they have several different terms. It goes back and forth. Messages go back and forth between October 12th and October 15th. Finally, October 15th, the terms are that they would all be sent back to Boston to prison, basically, to camps. They would be imprisoned, the forces. So on October 15th, Burgoyne asked for the terms. Gates accepts the terms. October 17th is the actual surrender date. Again, you'll see different dates, 17th, 18th, 19th. He decides to surrender. About 3,000 British are left. There's about 1,000 Germans, roughly, those that haven't run off and become Americans that are left. And they have the surrender. The surrender of Burgoyne to General Gates. There's Daniel Morgan. You can see a picture of this. This is Benedict Arnold, who was a hero of the battle. If you remember that, he had done really well for Washington. He was looked on with favor by Washington. He had done well in the battles, you know, in New Jersey and in New York. He was a very good general. You have to remember, and he was the one really who kind of pushed them to take the Bremen Redoubt. So he was a hero of this battle. There's no question about it. This is Baroness von Riedesel. Now, General von Riedesel's wife was along. I told you women were along. And she writes a lot of letters, which is how we know the British side of this. She wrote her memoirs, which you can read about what was going on back in the camps, of course, while the men were fighting. And this is a picture of her. Burgoyne, you saw some of the other maps. Here's Joseph Brandt, the Indians. There's Herkimer. I just put some of that together, some of the battle plans there. This is at Bennington when the Germans are pushed back and defeated by the militia, just to give you an idea. Anyway, finally, he surrenders. October 17th, surrender of Burgoyne's forces. Burgoyne has dinner with Schuyler in the Schuyler house that night. Then they go to Albany and have dinner. I've read about a couple of dinners that they had. So he has dinner. Now, they're sent back eventually to Boston, to a camp, which ends, of course, the campaign. Thank you very much. It's a lot involved because there's so many battles. It's really part of a campaign, not just a battle. It's not just a battle of Saratoga, but you saw all of the things that are involved in this, really a whole campaign of Western New York. What's interesting about it is it's our state, right? It takes place here in the areas that we know. You can go to Fort Stanwix today. You can go to Saratoga. As I say, I was kind of disappointed there wasn't more there. There's some cannons and you'll see some of the things. You'll see where Fraser's buried in the Great Redoubt here. He's buried there. There's a nice plaque about Simon Fraser, who was a great hero of the British there. And you can go, certainly. I went 2 years ago, which is when I got my book, obviously, of Saratoga, and I thought this really helps. It tells you a lot, obviously, more detail than we can probably get into, you know, about each of these different, the Bennington battle, the Hubbardton battle, Oriskany. So I thank you very much. I tried to do all of it in, you know, an hour and a half. It's kind of difficult, but so thank you. Any questions, anything I can, you know, try to answer?
Just an observation. It looks like the British made a big mistake taking on that many non-British. The Indians, the Germans, they weren't used to the English discipline of fighting.
Yeah.
They just drifted away.
Well, a lot of the forces, of course, were Howe had most of the forces down in Philadelphia. The key was to capture Philadelphia. And Howe says, if we capture Philadelphia, the revolution will be over. That's what they thought. Well, if we take Albany, the American, you know, the New England, Massachusetts, all those rebels up in Massachusetts will be split from the rest of the colonies. That maybe that'll end the war. Or if Howe captures Philadelphia, that'll end the war. But again, they weren't too pushed in this. And obviously, the British should have won the American Revolution. We should not have won. The British had a professional army. We didn't. We had a bunch of farmers at the beginning who knew how to shoot. And that was about it. You know, they didn't. They had never met. And you have to remember, if you read stories of the American Revolution, a lot of the original battles of Washington, the militia would fight. They'd see the British coming with the bayonets, and they'd run away. So, you know, it's hard to win battles when the guys are running, you know, when their backs are to the enemy. So you can't win too many battles. So you have to remember that Washington had a big job in forming this, you know, Continental Army. And the same thing here. The thing that was good here was that you had some Continentals, but you had all these militia, and obviously so many numbers of them because of the huge amounts of these militias that they outnumbered the British forces. That, again, he was outnumbered during most of this campaign, except in the beginning. And so there were, and plus they knew the woods, they knew the area, and of course he didn't, and that's a big advantage militarily. If you know the area, you know how to maneuver. The poor British were along the road, you know, and that was about it. And then they moved into the wilderness, and they really were at a total disadvantage.
And well, your Indian auxiliaries are basically your recon people and your terror. But once things don't go well,
right, they just
they
run off.
Yep. In Western discipline.
That's it.
They're fighting their own type of war. Right. So as soon as you could slow them down,
right,
they'd start. Plus, the British didn't trust the Indian recon, despite the fact the Indians knew what was going on.
Right, right, right. And, you know, there's a little suspicion, well, these are savages. Mm-hmm. Remember, they're savages. They're not, you know, they're not people. They're not white people. So they're savages. So there was a little bit of, but they did, you know, they did use the Indians fairly. We had done that in the French and Indian War. We had used the Indians against the, you know, the Hurons and the Canadian Indians, obviously, during the French and Indian War. So Indians were used to fighting Indians. That was normal for them. They didn't have a problem. And obviously, the Indians were not happy about this settlement west. You know, they didn't want these white people moving into, this is our woods. And they're moving in here with their cabins and their, you know, Bibles and whatever else they have, their organs and, you know, their furniture, and they're moving into our area. So, of course, the Indians were always opposed to, you know, and there were many attacks. That's why Fort Stanwix, Fort Dayton was set up. And the other forts really were, again, originally protect against Indians. Then in the French and Indian War against the French, who had the base at Fort Ticonderoga back in the French and Indian War. Obviously, the British built forts, the French built forts in the French and Indian War. And these forts here, of course, were mostly against Indians. They were wooden, you know, the wooden stockade that was supposed to protect against Indian attacks. That was their job. Their job was not to fight the British. It was to fight mostly Indians. Well, thank you very much. I hope it was informative. Gives you an idea of what the major battle, certainly in New York State, the major campaign, is part of the American Revolution. With the defeat of this, of course, the French decide to join America. One of the aftermaths of this thing is the French was looking for a victory. We were hoping for a victory somewhere. Washington hadn't had much of the victories other than Trenton and Princeton. So it helped the French alliance, which helped us Navy-wise, and eventually Yorktown, and of course the end of the American Revolution. So it was certainly an important event that happens in our own state.
I think the Spanish also joined.
Yeah, Spanish too, the French and the Spanish against the British.
I don't think they did much, did they, Spanish?
No. They didn't have any power. No. But the French were hugely supported, the Navy, and again the army that the French eventually sent over with Washington that defeated the British at Yorktown. It's another great battle.
My name is Eric Pauls, and I'm a member of the Dole Institute Student Advisory Board. Welcome to the Dole Institute of Politics, and thank you for attending today's presentation. The Dole Institute Student Advisory Board is composed of KU students committed to the work of the Dole Institute. We attend regular meetings and assist at events like these. The Dole Institute would like to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's program, please let us know by contacting us on Facebook, Twitter, or through our website. Your attendance and feedback help shape future programming. Now, before we begin today, I'd like to remind you to please turn off your cell phones. After the presentation, we will have some time for audience questions and answers. And if you have a question, please raise your hand, and I will come bring a microphone over to you. And please just ask one brief question. And now, please welcome Rich Barbuto.
Well, thank you all for braving the ice and the snow and the cold. We have a American Revolution theme going on here for us today. And as Thomas Paine said, something negative about those sunshine soldiers and those summer patriots, and you people are clearly not those. You've